Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Yep, sure Woo! Is.
Today we're going to be talking about Marco Polo, the third serial of The First Doctor, which consists of seven episodes. The Roof of the World, The Singing Sands.
It was 14 episodes on YouTube, but they were each half episodes.
that's true. The Singing Sands, 500 Eyes, The Wall of Lies, Rider from Shang-Tu, Mighty Kublai Khan, and Assassin at Peking, which aired from February 22nd, 1964 to April 4th, 1964.
And you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
You should introduce that mysterious voice.
Okay, let me introduce that mysterious voice. Today we have a special guest, a good friend of ours. He was in our wedding, much like our last guest.
Ooh, are we just going to have everyone from our wedding on?
Eventually, probably. There's a lot of Doctor Who.
We didn't actually have all that many people at your wedding. Well, okay, you had a lot of Tony's relatives.
Yeah.
Do your relatives watch Doctor Who, Tony?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, my Uncle Tim, who I did ask if he wanted to be on the podcast. My Uncle Tim and his daughter.
Yeah, he has like a big like Doctor Who setup in his basement.
So all of your guests in this podcast will be wedding guests first. You have to go through every wedding guest who watches Doctor Who before you're allowed any outside guests.
Ooh, I can, we can have my cousin Trisha too.
Yeah.
I'm a very Whovian family, I guess.
That's good, though.
That's good.
But anyway, this is Ray Friesen.
Hi. I haven't combed my hair. Sorry.
They didn't,
I didn't
know
mean
that.
To be so unkempt on your podcast.
Way to be. he does all ages graphic novels, and he did a Kickstarter for an awesome book called Fairy Tales I Just Made Up.
That's, I think, my first book in a while that you weren't involved with, Joe, because you're usually my coloring assistant.
Yeah, I wasn't involved in that one at all.
Didn't need no assistance on that one.
I bought it. I read it. It was good.
Yeah, you pledged my Kickstarter, which is really cool.
Colors weren't as great.
Yeah, the colors were awful.
If you have it your way, you always make everything like purple and green.
I like purple and green.
You just want everything purple and green. Like the sun is purple and green. And they're drinking a glass of water. It's purple and green.
Maybe you shouldn't have hired a colorblind person to do your color work. I'm not colorblind.
You're not colorblind. You're just color stupid. I'm a cartoonist. I haven't combed my hair. I've known you for an awfully long time. We met through that Douglas Adams thing. Mm-hmm. And then I put you to work, but without paying you. And that lasted for a number of years. So that was pretty great for me. You came and visited a couple times here. I live in California. You live wherever it is you live. Tenabama.
Georgia.
Georgia, Tenabama.
Close enough.
So we've seen each other in person a surprising amount considering how far apart we live. Yeah, I've written a bunch of all-ages graphic novels, including Cupcakes of Doom, Pirate Penguin vs. Ninja Chicken, and the brand new Fairy Tales I Just Made Up, which is really awesome. And you podcast people should check them out at rayfriesen.com. I'm a big Doctor Who fan. I think I'm the first person to make Joe watch Doctor Who. Tony already liked it, but Joe was being all Joe about it.
I'm going to watch all the way through, which is what we're doing now, so I guess you win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you did win, because you're like, no, I want to start at the beginning. And we're like, no, you don't want to start at the beginning. You want to start with David Tennant. And you're like, I have opinions.
No,
and then we slapped you a lot.
You want to start with nine.
Yeah, no, that's, you should start... You should start with series one of the reboot, because you have to see him become David Tennant. You can't just start with Tooth and Claw or The Christmas Invasion.
Watching Tooth and Claw.
I always was expecting a follow-up to that episode where we see that all the royal family are werewolves. I was disappointed that didn't happen.
So how much classic Who do you know about?
I have seen a smattering of every single Doctor, but I have not watched all of classic Who. I've watched a lot of Four. You know, there's no bad Doctor. There's just bad writing. But all the characters and actors themselves are good. I watched all the new series and then slowly went back and watched the old stuff. I have trouble with the pacing. I have trouble with the special effects just because...
That's my favorite part.
The first movie I remember watching was Jurassic Park, so my bar is set pretty high.
Is this your first... This is Tony's first reconstruction. It's not my first. Well, I mean, it was my first.
I watched one of the animated reconstructions that they did for the second Doctor, but I haven't seen any YouTube reconstructions where it's just a lot of stills and talking.
Yeah, I think it's Loose Cannon who does it.
Is he a rebel? He plays by his own rules.
Yeah.
They team him up with lots of partners and they keep dying. he's a loose cannon. Or does he have like a boat?
Both.
Okay. A boat cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are quite frequent in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is Tony's first reconstruction. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you said this was serial three. So you guys have done Unearthly Child.
Four.
And then
this is four. Yeah.
This is the four?
Yeah, I said third earlier, and I meant four.
Yeah, I was thinking Unearthly Child, the whole introducing to them, and then they went to see cavemen for some reason. And yes. Then there's a lot of Daleks. And then this one, is this the first one after the Daleks?
No, there was a really short one called The Edge of Destruction.
Which is one of the best so far.
Yeah, it's...
Did they find the edge?
I think they went back to the beginning
of...
They went back to the
beginning of time. Nothing makes sense. And then
Susan's a serial killer for no reason.
And there's a monologue at the end that's nice.
Okay, is anyone else kind of annoyed by Susan?
No, yeah.
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 There's a lot of yelling.
Like, she's really entertaining, but also because she's stupid. It's weird, this era of Doctor Who. It's kind of Doctor Who, but if you're used to the modern stuff, there's really not all that much in common sometimes. But then it's exactly the same show, so it's weird.
But yeah, we watched, we've already recorded the third episode with Chris Cherry.
Are you recording these podcasts in order?
Yeah.
Okay, so I could just stonewall you. I could sign out of Skype right now, and then you'd be stuck because you could never continue with this podcast. So I could blackmail you like crazy.
Yeah, if you wanted
to. We could just do it without you.
We could.
I don't think so. You already agreed to do it with me, so.
Like, there was blood, you know, contracts.
Yeah, Joe,
and...
stop sending me blood. My fridge is full.
No, this is not only our first reconstruction. This is the first one that pretty much has no supernatural elements, and it's also our first historical. Yeah. I mean, unless you count the caveman thing, but I don't know if that counts as historical necessarily.
No, I wasn't really there to teach you anything.
I think if you have to make up the characters, it's not historical.
Right. And this, yeah, this, so this is the first, like, real historical.
Marco Polo is about not having water.
But Marco Polo, well, we'll get into it in a little bit, but I think they tried a little too hard to stay accurate sometimes, and they could have had, like, in modern day Doctor Who, they meet Shakespeare, and then there's witches and tornadoes and things of that nature. Like this one, no, we have to stay according to how history was.
I kind of like that. I kind of like being in the past and being like, guess what? The conflict isn't aliens for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish the conflict wasn't always aliens. Like, the aliens are always up to no good, always trying to invade. There's a lot of other things that could happen. Just one character should have randomly turned out to be an alien, but that had nothing to do with the plot. They're just an alien who chose to live in 13th century Mongolia.
Well, I think the actor who plays Tagana is pretty otherworldly.
So all of the Mongolian, Chinese, etc. people were pretty much all played by white British people, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
At least they tried. I mean, like, they tried with makeup. They had pretty good costumes and sets for the time period. They didn't do an awful job, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as racist as it could be.
It wasn't as racist as I expected it to be, which means it was just kind of awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Only, like, medium.
So, the first episode.
The Roof of the World, which they say 300 times in the episode.
They do.
They like name-dropping the titles in this serial.
It's almost good that their budget was so low and they didn't have to try too hard. Like, they had a lot of license to go to other places and not worried about it too bad. Like, in today's Doctor Who, if they wanted to do an episode in China, they would borderline want to fly to China and make it look amazing, which I would totally support. I would like to see this episode rebooted, to be honest. But back in the day, they're like, oh, let's just throw some Chinese stuff up in the background and they're in China. I wish New Who would go to other places on Earth more. Like, I want to see a New Who episode in, like, feudal Japan. I can't believe they haven't done that yet.
That'd be cool.
Why haven't they done that yet?
I know, right? With, like, then the samurai turn out to be robots. So you can see where this goes.
There could be an alien rabbit named Usagi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why aren't you writing for Doctor Who, Ray?
I've been trying! I talked to the people who published the Doctor Who comics in the U.S. as soon as they started, and I've annoyed every single editor and publisher of the Doctor Who comics because I want to write for them so bad. I've made friends with a lot of the people who've drawn Doctor Who comics. I've attended a bunch of Doctor Who conventions. I've written some scripts. I wanted to bring back the character Frobisher, who was the sixth Doctor's comic strip companion, because I think he's great, and I've devoted a lot of thinking towards me being involved with Doctor Who. I know I will someday. I just haven't weaseled my way yet.
You'll just wear him down eventually.
And this incredibly popular podcast will get the word out.
Oh, catapult me to fame. Yeah.
Okay, so first off, to talk about the episode.
Yeah, I guess we
have
do that.
The footprint
that leads to nothing?
Yeah.
Was that, I thought it was going to be a Yeti, and then it wasn't.
Yeah, that was the cliffhanger in the last serial, was, look at this giant footprint, and then it's like, oh, it probably melted, and now it's bigger.
Now it's bigger. That's it.
All right, let's get on with the story. Like, what a cop-out.
The two companions, Ian and Barbara, they do a lot of trying to prove that the exciting things are just average ordinary, don't they?
I'm going to be honest. I feel like it's more Ian.
Well, they do a lot of things where, like, I think Susan said something like, there's this thing, and it's awful. Like, that couldn't possibly be true. Stop lying. And it's like, you guys travel around in a phone booth and do crazy things all the time. Don't just immediately dismiss whatever they have to say.
It always happens with women, too.
It always happens to Barbara and to Susan, where it's just like, I saw a person, and then Ian or the doctor is like, no, you didn't see a person. That's dumb. And it's like, that. It's totally reasonable that they might have saw a person. Why are you being so dismissive for that reason?
And then there's the one episode where it's like, Susan says she sees something, and then the doctor's like, no, you didn't. And then Ian's like, no, wait, she probably did. And the doctor's like, yeah, I guess so. Sexism.
So we get racism and sexism in these episodes. So that's how you know it's the 60s.
The dudes never believe the ladies.
Did you watch the when they had the Doctor Who 50th anniversary extravaganza?
No, that's spoilers. We're not there yet.
Not in that episode, but they did a TV docudrama around the same time about the first Doctor in that era.
Oh, no, I haven't.
I'm trying to remember what it's called. An Adventure in Time and Space. That's what it's called.
Yeah, it has the Harry Potter guy as Hartnell, right?
It's really, really well done. And so I guess after you have finished the Hartnell section of this podcast, you can watch that.
That'll be two years from now.
Yeah, we calculated it's probably going to be 2 years. I'd also like to watch the Peter Cushing movies at some point and do like a podcast on that. Have you seen those?
A separate podcast or an episode of this podcast?
like a special episode.
If that's a separate podcast, it's not going to have too many episodes.
Well, no, like a special episode. Like,
okay, like a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
That's what
Tony's been saying. So like, yeah, we'll watch like...
Tony, you're brilliant. Flick Joe in the ear for me because of how smart you are.
I'll do it later.
Have you seen Doctor Who and the Daleks and the whatever the other one's called? I don't remember.
I did. I've seen, I think all the ones you've seen so far just spread across the past 5 years. Saw The Unearthly Child, saw the first pile of Daleks when the Daleks didn't do anything.
Yeah, they're like really separate from the plot.
They grow vegetables.
I wish the Daleks still grew vegetables, to be honest.
I do too.
I'd like to have, you know, in the Eccleston Tennant like early years, for the first couple seasons, they'd have like an off episode where the main actors weren't available, and so they'd like appear for a minute or two, but it was mostly other people. And I always kind of like those because those episodes are always weird. And I'd like to see one that's like an all Dalek episode, and it's like what the Daleks are getting up to when the Doctor's not around.
God no.
The voices would be awful if you could like. So it would be a good comic book.
Yes,
because
okay.
Then you wouldn't have to hear them.
It could. You but, could. Not
in terms of storytelling, it would be interesting. That's like, you know, I like Donald Duck comic books, but I don't like Donald Duck cartoons because then you have to hear him. It's this, you know, Donald Duck and the Daleks. We should just do that.
And then everyone's
ears would die forever.
What happens in the episode? I still don't know.
It's been a while since we actually watched it.
In this episode?
Yeah, so...
The Marco Polo one.
The roof of the world.
Okay, so Marco Polo comes in and he confiscates the TARDIS. And the Doctor's like, okay, here's the keys. I'll allow you to confiscate this from me. And then he spends 5 episodes whining about it. And then he gets it back somehow. I mean, a merry chase through Mongolia as the TARDIS has been stolen. That's a really interesting summary. But really, the Doctor is like just hanging out for months on end in real time going, I wish I had my TARDIS back, but this Italian guy said no.
Well, he's not even in a lot of it. He naps.
Yeah, he's like really sick. And, like, not even in a lot.
The Doctor does not drive the plot of this episode.
Yeah, and, like, this actually, this entire serial takes place over a long period of time.
Yeah, yes. Like, elapsed time is, like, them traveling around for months, and they're just, like, kind of cool with that, which is really weird.
Yeah, and there's narration from Marco Polo, which is weird.
Yeah, it cuts to, like, an Indiana Jones map showing him going to all these little cities, and then it'll come back, and they're like, oh, so now we're in Chengdu. And it's the same set as before.
I'm reading your notes, and it says, he's so old.
Yeah, because this is like the first, like the Doctor is just really old. And like the show is not afraid to go with that.
So here's a spoiler alert for the last episode of this series, which I'm assuming the people listening to this podcast are pseudo-familiar with. Marco Polo is like, I need to give the TARDIS to Kublai Khan so he will allow me permission to go back home. in like the new series, the doctor would be like, well, I could just take you home. And then he would.
Yeah.
Like that was in the, you know, the doctor has invited historical people inside the TARDIS before. Like at the end, the doctor just leaves and Marco Polo is still there. And it's like, you writers, the doctor could have taken Marco Polo home. Not very much is known about his journey home. He just made it home. That would have been a really interesting part of the episode.
To be fair, though, at this point in time, the doctor doesn't really have control over where the TARDIS goes.
The doctor can't take the TARDIS anywhere on purpose.
Yeah.
At this point.
Okay, so it's been a while since I've watched the episodes that aren't Marco Polo. So at the moment, he's literally like flying blind. He has no idea where he's going.
I mean, pretty much, yeah. He doesn't know what he's doing at all.
He hasn't found the randomizer switch and turned it off.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that until like the fourth doctor.
He did find the fast return switch, which was stuck. That was what was in the Edge of Destruction.
Button was stuck and it almost killed everybody.
Classic. So and
classic
and,
who?
It's like that on my car too. If you don't have the CD player just right, the car keeps crashing.
So in also in Marco Polo's group is a character named Tagana.
Joe, you love Tagana.
I do love Tagana.
You're gonna cosplay as Tagana.
He's so delightfully hammy and evil.
Joe was heartbroken because he couldn't see him.
Right. It sucks that this serial does not exist visually because I am sure he has eaten the scenery. And I would love to see that.
You know, it's pretty cool. He's getting in sword fights. He's stealing all their water. He's riding on horses. That's pretty action-y for 1964.
You know, he's trying to, like, dissuade Marco from, like, following these people. And, like, his arguments are actually pretty valid. Like, he's pretty good at, like, deceiving Marco Polo. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, yeah, you're right. These people just came out of nowhere. And why would you trust them? His arguments are good. He's a good villain, I feel like.
Well, Marco Polo's like, well, of course I trust them. They're white people.
And you have a very evil-looking beard.
Yeah, Tagana's beard was extremely evil for the time. Yeah, I like him. He's like, you wanted water? I throw your water in the desert. Which was like a cliffhanger for episode 2, I think. It's like, everyone's dying of thirst. He's like, ha 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 ha. But like, they don't hear him doing that. That was just for his personal enjoyment. Because then they still kind of trust him for the next 6 episodes. I thought that was going to be a thing. Like, it comes in on episode 3, and they're like, Tagana, you had water this whole time? Let's fight. But no,
that's what happens to the doctor.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is also an interesting time frame with the show. It's very to be continued, and there's probably very little advance warning of what the episodes are going to be like. Like, today, being a Doctor Who fan, you're like, okay, these episodes are a two-parter, and I know this is going to lead in the finale and stuff like this. But this episode, this is like a 7-part serial. You have no idea when it's going to end. Just like stuff keeps happening. And then it kind of drags, but then it'll be really exciting. And then all of a sudden that serial's over and they go do something else. And it's like, oh, okay. You didn't know that they're going to be wandering around the desert for 5 episodes.
Yeah. And I imagine if you just tuned in, like this was your first thing and you're like, I guess these are the characters for the show. That's what I wonder about. Like, did people like, oh, wait, no, they're jumping somewhere else now. I guess it doesn't follow Marco Polo for the rest of the series.
I wanted to know more about this Tagana character.
Maybe Tagana was the master the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably was. Let's retcon that, because he has a beard. Everybody with a beard turns out to be the master.
I like him calling them evil spirits all the time.
Evil spirits, I will waste your water.
Like, he almost screwed himself over with that plot,
though. He almost
didn't
make it. Well, we should explain.
No, I don't think so.
So, they land, they're playing in the snow, right? That's how, like, the last one ends, and they find the footprint.
The Yeti footprints.
That's just a regular footprint.
Which, I'm pretty sure there are Yetis later. So, obviously, someone watching that episode said, okay, I need to do an actual Yeti episode. But those Yetis were in London, so, you know, it's weird.
But then, yeah, the Marco Polo shows up. They run into Marco Polo. Marco Polo is like, that's a cool TARDIS. I'm gonna take it.
I'm gonna take it. Please give me the keys. And then they go, okay.
Well, yeah, why do they agree to it?
That's... And then the doctor has a secret other key. They could have left up until the point when the second key was also confiscated.
The way that it starts is he's going to take the TARDIS because it's broken.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's broken.
And give it to Kublai Khan as a present.
Well, before that, Marco Polo is just going to move it because he's nice. So, like, take it to town where he can fix it? I guess. I don't know what's going
to
be.
I think the doctor might be trying to fix it. Like, they're stuck for the first part of the episode because he's trying to repair the improbability drive or something.
Yeah, I remember being like, is it really broken? Because the last time the ship was broken, the doctor broke it on purpose because he wanted to go exploring.
But no, yeah, so he gives them, they give it to him basically because they're like, yeah, we'll move it for you. Which hurts my brain a tiny bit Because how heavy is the TARDIS? Is it just as heavy as it is on the outside?
Yeah, four Sauntarns can lift it. Okay, I have a British police box in my backyard that was a wedding present from my wedding a couple years ago. It's not a TARDIS. It's just a blue phone booth. And it is really heavy. The TARDIS is known for its ability to move. It is really hard to move when you have a real one. Like, you have to unscrew it and move it in four pieces or else you'll be sad forever.
So, yeah, they're transporting it so that somewhere where he can fix it, I guess. And then sometime while they're moving, Marco Polo is like, just kidding, I'm going to keep it.
I think they, like, screw up and it's like, it flies. And he's like, it flies? I'm on it.
Which he never goes inside. They never show him any proof of it's cool. He really just likes the color.
It could just be a box.
And I like how, like, he doesn't believe it at first. Marco Polo does this multiple times throughout the serial where, like, they'll say, like, the TARDIS does something or it's like, it flies or it goes through time. And he'll be like, I remember when I was at Khan's place and then they did this really cool trick. So, yeah, I believe you now. Every time he goes into this, like, story about how, like, Khan pulled some parlor trick and made him believe in magic.
The mysteries of the Orient and show him things that the people in Italy would never believe. Like, pasta!
But I saw it with my own eyes, he says.
Well, okay, his plot is really convoluted in terms of he wants to give this to the Khan to earn his freedom so that he can walk back to Italy. I keep going, like, doctors say, I have a flying box. Let me take you to Italy right now. That's what they'd be doing if this was a new series episode, and then they'd have to find some other reason to stick around.
The thing is, in this point in time, the doctor isn't, like, emotionally developed enough to be considerate enough of someone else's situation to consider that as a solution. He's too busy pouting. That's it.
Pouting and fainting like a farty old man. I would love to see this serial sort of redone in the modern series. I mean, not necessarily redone, but a lot of the same ideas. My thought was interesting is Kublai Khan is Genghis Khan's grandson. They were both the big warlord people. And the Ninth Doctor says that the assembled hordes of Genghis Khan could not break through the doors of the TARDIS. The Mongolians have wanted the TARDIS for a long time. They know about it. They're trying to get it from him. So I think it would be really cool. Me and my wife got into, on Netflix, they have the Marco Polo TV show that is being filmed in, I think, like Indonesia or something like that. But the actors and the costumes are amazing. New Who needs to do a crossover with modern Marco Polo. It would be awesome because that show is like historically accurate almost. And him wandering onto their set would look amazing. Stephen Moffat, if you're listening to this, please contact those people and do a crossover.
Wait, contact you as well so you can write it.
Yeah, I'll write it. Jeez. We got so excited about the Mongols. We've been doing like all this research on them. We've got like we bought a book, The Secret Sexy History of the Mongol Queens, and like we got all Mongolian for about a month. We like ate at Mongolian barbecues every day. We read Wikipedia. It was pretty full on.
Yeah, and wow. So this episode is perfect for you.
Yeah, well, when you offered me choices of episodes, I chose this one because we were actively chugging Marco Polo on Netflix as we spoke. Because, like, we watch a lot of, like, Crash Course, which is, like, world history. And the guy keeps saying, like, the Mongolians are the exception to every rule of how empires are. And, like, all sorts of stuff. And everyone's always like this, except the Mongols. The Mongols were really cool, FYI.
So they have, or Marco Polo has the TARDIS, and he's going to trade it. And literally, I guess the rest of the episodes are just them pretty much walking through the desert.
Yeah, with subplots.
What?
I mean, there's
can't
the subplot
any,
of Marco's servant, who is in an arranged marriage coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And then she bonds with Susan, which
that
is kind of nice.
Cute.
There was some good character stuff in these episodes, surprisingly.
Yeah.
That was all nice. Ping Cho, yeah.
Ping Cho and Susan, they were besties, and it was adorable.
Well, the doctor, they lost their first opportunity to escape because Susan went back to say goodbye to Ping Cho and got everybody captured. Like, episode 3 or 4, they were about to fly away, and then they had to go find Susan, and then Tagana caught up with them. So her friendship kind of almost ruined it for everyone.
That's true.
Yeah, this is a lesson to you, Susan. Friendship will ruin it for everyone.
There was the sandstorm scene where they bonded. I mean, they survived a thing together. That sandstorm, the sandstorm scene was pretty cool. It would have been, what? I mean, it was mostly audio, so it kind of worked.
Pictures are better on radio.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, if you don't see it, you're just listening to it. You don't see if the production value is bad. You just imagine it.
Your imagination can fill in the gaps.
This show had the best special effects so far.
Yeah, because we can just pretend that it was really good. I think we've already covered the Singing Sands. We've covered a lot of this.
It's also actually weird because the one episode was called The 500 Eyes. And according to the Marco Polo show we've been watching, Kublai Khan's, one of his people at court, was named 100 Eyes. And he was this blind kung fu master guy. So I got a little confused and was like, wait, there's five of 100 Eyes? And he's going to be there showing them kung fu? Awesome! And then no.
No, it's just,
no, it's just a cave.
This I don't know if Tagana was an actual historical figure, but this episode actually tried to be historically accurate. They had some history teachers on staff, I suppose.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of dialogue that's very, like, obvious. Like, yes, we are in the year 1289.
You are being taught things by me, a history teacher.
Exactly.
Back when the show was trying to actually teach kids science and history.
Oh, okay. So I want to go back to the cliffhanger where he pours out the water. They ran out of water, which Tagana, like, cut their water supply.
There's no, like, Aquafina bottles inside the TARDIS.
Yeah.
None.
And, like, Tagana has caused all
this. So the machine, the water machine's broken.
Yeah, he broke the water machine.
Did they say that? Did they say he broke the water machine? Or was that
no.
in the previous
yeah,
episode?
No, yeah, in the first episode, he, like, walks
the
out TARDIS of
the TARDIS. The TARDIS has a swimming pool!
See, I have a theory that it doesn't yet. Because it's a baby.
It grows.
And it's very small now. And there's very little stuff on the TARDIS at the moment. And there's just one water dispenser, and that's it. And it's borked.
But then, like, yeah, so Tagana goes to the Oasis and pours out the water. Which, when you're just listening to it in audio, I thought he was, like, pissing in the water. I was uncertain for a second.
No, it sounds great. Tagana is very impressed with himself. He's a really good character.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he takes all their water and pours it all out and stuff. And then he's like, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to the Oasis and bring back water. And then almost doesn't make it to the Oasis. Like, yeah. He almost dies by his own sabotage.
Which is not the best plan.
That's how dedicated he is.
But miraculously, everyone is saved by condensation. It's never happened before.
They're all
before.
Very surprised about these desert nomads who squeeze existence out of the sand have never experienced condensation before.
Yeah, and like, has the TARDIS ever had
well,
condensation?
That's the thing. They're like, yeah, it's a scene set up so that you can teach kids about condensation, I guess. But it's like, because it's hot on the outside and cold on the inside. And it's like, but the outside and the inside aren't in the same.
Are in two different dimensions.
So yeah. Why?
I think just the swimming pool on the floor above was leaking. That was all. Like, then they drink it. Ah, it tastes like chlorine. It's delicious.
Yeah, no one believes him and just thought that he was hoarding water.
The TARDIS has a swimming pool. The doctor just doesn't know that it has more than one room.
Not yet.
And we stole it a couple weeks ago. He hasn't explored it yet.
And then we have the Cave of 500 Eyes, where there's a Ping Cho tells a story and everyone sits around.
They do lots of screaming and twisting their ankles.
Yeah.
Everyone falls down.
Barb gets captured.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just like a lot of waffling about because they built some good sets and they need to have enough stuff to do on them. Like, okay, we'll have him get captured, then the TARDIS will get stolen, then we'll fall down. And then we'll meet this dignitary, and then, like, it's really just them hanging out for a long time.
There is cute stuff, like when, is it Ian and Tagana, or is it Ian and Marco Polo who play chess?
It's
Ian and
Marco Polo.
Ian and Marco Polo.
I think Tagana just stares evilly from the sidelines.
Oh, that's right, and talks about how it's a metaphor for war, and laughs.
Yeah.
I'd rather do actual war and chop both your heads off.
And I like when, like, Ping Cho's telling the story, and, like, Susan's all, like, cuddled up
with
the doctor.
The doctor has
cute.
Like, his hand on her shoulder, and it's a nice family moment.
Yeah, that's cute. I have notes here, and it says, Barbara is too perfect for this bullshit. Ping Cho plus Susan, gay? Doc? Racist?
Oh, because there's a scene where he goes, he's talking about Ping Cho, and he goes, I don't trust that Chinese girl. And we all looked at each other and went, oh no. What just happened?
Grumpy old white guy says he doesn't trust the Chinese girl. Oh, Doc.
Oh, no.
But then he gives reasons that are not
racist.
Necessarily racist.
Because William Hartnell, like, flubbed and ad-libbed a lot of his lines, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's in the script or not. That could just be his opinion. No, in the Adventure in Time and Space documentary, Waris Hussein and Verdi Lambert take him out for lunch, trying to convince him to play the role of the Doctor. And they take him to a Chinese restaurant, and he is just like, I hate this. Where are the fish and chips?
Oh, no.
One of my favorite Hartnell moments is a blooper, which was in the Daleks serial. There's these radiation pills, but he's like, there's these radiation gloves, drugs. And like, but everybody reacts to him saying gloves, like they know what he's talking about. They go, and then he still corrects himself.
Because it was live, right?
I mean, pretty much.
Or at least, like, they only had enough tape to record it once.
They would occasionally re-record things, but only if it was, like, really, really messed up.
Like if he set someone's wig on fire during the shot.
Yeah, or like the doctor said, fuck, or something.
Which, he said an awful lot back then.
Let's see. I don't know. There's a singing... The doctor sang? When did the doctor sing? I don't remember that. I have singing doctor in here.
You should probably take more detailed notes. None of these phrases make any sense.
Yeah, I don't remember what you're talking about. Just
terrible guarding.
They did some... There was, like, some singing. Oh, like, I liked the, like, gong and sinister drums were playing for every episode. It was just in the background. There was bum, 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 bum. It's just like, this isn't a sinister scene. Why are you doing this?
All right, I'm skipping forward to Rider from Shang 2. Let's see. Ian gets really excited when he has a plan, even though it sounds
though
like
it's
the stupidest
never a good
plan.
Plan.
We should get bamboo!
They light it on fire and it explodes, and it makes Tigana's forces are like, oh, crap, bamboo, let's get out of here. We're fierce warriors, but, you know, bamboo.
When Tigana fails to kill everybody by dehydration...
He attempts to kill them with swords, I guess.
Yeah, well, there's... Bandits?
Like, he never actually attacks them. He's always trying to maintain that he's innocent and everyone who follows his orders is not connected to him.
Yeah, so he's like, there's going to be bandits, and there are, but, like, they work for Tigana.
Yeah, and they attack too soon? Or something? Like, he's like, wait a bit, and then they're like, no, we want to attack now.
He's supposed to give them the signal, and then they're like, was that the signal? No, that wasn't the signal. Let's pretend that's the signal.
They're pretty much prisoners of, like, Marco Polo, and they... Ian escapes from the tent, and there's like just like a guard just sitting there, and like he's a terrible guard. And then he turns the guard around. And
guarding
he's
is a really boring job.
Yeah, well, he was like dead, so like he was really bad at guarding. Just the worst.
If you're the main character, that's the kind of guard you want.
That's the kind of guard you will inevitably get.
I mean, I don't think fiction would get anywhere if there were good guards and decent shots.
I have a thing here that says goldfish scene adorable.
You really need to keep better
I don't
notes,
know what
man.
I'm talking about.
There was like a giant koi pond and Susan was like, fish! And then she was like petting the fish.
No, and they were saying that it was Susan and Ping Cho and they were like, that one is like Ian because he's dumb. that one's like Barbara because she's tired of everybody's shit. And that one's like the doctor because he's just circling around everybody not knowing what's happening.
Floating belly up.
That episode, Rider from Shang 2, is all about the secondary characters, too, because you have the Rider from Shang 2, who's like a mailman, like super mailman. Then you have...
He's Kevin Costner.
Then you have, like, the very, like, over-the-top, campy, like, welcome to our town!
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love
character?
That guy.
Yeah.
What was his name? He was really excited to be on television. Hello! Welcome to Shang 2! Would you like some lunch? We have lunch, yeah, yes.
And then you have the guy with the eye patch and the monkey.
From Indiana Jones.
Yeah, who's also pretty over the top. And then you have a scene with the guy who's all excited about Shang 2 and the monkey guy in a scene together.
And it's the most ridiculous scene in anything ever.
But it's fantastic.
I don't even know what their plan was. I think they're going to steal the TARDIS from the caravan, is that?
Yeah, like legally. But illegally.
There's a lot of, like, planning skullduggery without actually doing very much.
That's it. They get to...
Like,
the,
yeah,
the
like,
city?
There's, like, a... Here's, like, the contract to move the TARDIS or whatever.
Right, so...
And they swap it with, like, a...
In order to get there faster, they're going to take all of their, like, luggage. Someone else is going to take it.
Right.
And that's the guy who runs that place is the guy with the voice.
Yes!
And the guy with the monkey and the eye patch...
Is going to hijack it, basically.
Right.
Right.
That's the plan that they make.
That is the plan. Oh, and then we had, like, this is another reason why I wish this existed visually, is I don't remember what this scene is. I think they're trying to break back into the TARDIS, and Ian, to distract a guard, pretends to be drunk. You don't get to see anything, because it doesn't exist.
It is one of the tragedies of Classic Who. Ian.
Yeah, and also, it's one of their... constantly kind of crappy plans, like, let's just pretend to have a fight and then throw mud on a Dalek, or let's pretend to be drunk. So, yeah, I like their really kind of crappy plans.
They had to try a lot of crappy plans before the Sonic screwdriver got invented.
Yeah.
Now they just Sonic the Guard.
And then we come to Mighty Kublai Khan.
We have to talk. Is that the episode where the doctor has to ride a horse and he's miserable and he hates it?
Yes.
I would never ride this horse again. This horse is dead to me.
Like, he spends the first half of the episode just being like, "Oh my god, why do you people use horses? This is the worst.
Why don't you have spaceships?" I have a spaceship. But no!
And it's also at this point that Ian lets Marcus in on the fact that the TARDIS is a time machine, and I have this note, which is pretty much what happened. Marco's like, "I don't believe things, but then I see stuff. But I don't believe this!"
Which is amusing to me, because it's like Ian is having a conversation with himself.
Yes.
Even though I'm standing inside the TARDIS that is bigger on the inside, I know this is all just a game.
They never open it and show it to Marco Polo, do they? No. They never, like, take him inside and say, "Look, here's proof to all the stuff we've been claiming."
Which would be, like, the easiest thing to do.
Right. I hate plot solutions like that that are not, there's an easy answer and then everyone ignores it.
And then we still have, like, Tagana struggling for one of his plans to work. And he's pretty much like a Scooby-Doo villain at this point. "I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you meddling kids and your old man."
You meddling Time Lords.
Yeah. And then the most hilarious, awesome thing happens, which is we've been building up to the mighty Kublai Khan. And he comes out, and he's just this really old fart.
He was, like, way too skinny. That was my major complaint. Like, in the paintings that we have of him and the actors that they've cast for the Marco Polo show, he's this big, fat, powerful Mongolian guy who, again, gets older and older. Like, the show we're watching is Marco Polo's 20. Here he's probably 40.
I mean,
he was hanging around there for
British.
A long time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's British. Well, everyone's British because the TARDIS translation circuit is set to British. They were speaking flawlessly in whatever they were supposed to be speaking. But, yeah, he was just this tiny little old man. It's like, that's not the Kublai Khan that I know about.
Yeah, but still, it's hilarious.
You have this big reveal, and he's somebody's grandfather. And then him and the doctor are like old man buddies.
He is a lot of people's grandfathers. Like, a ridiculous number of people in the world alive today are related to Genghis and Kublai Khan. He had so many concubines. It's ridiculous. No, like, literally, like, 1 in 5 Asian people is related to Genghis Khan.
Jeez.
I'm making that number up because I don't remember the exact statistic, but it's that level of impressive. And if you watch Marco Polo, you'll get to see it all because it's trying to be Game of Thrones.
And you're like, "Wait, is that my ancestor? Is that my great 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 grandmother?"
He had, like, his wife who was the queen, who was cool, and then he had all of his other wives, and then he had all of his mistresses, and then he had all of his concubines. And that was part of the reason why he was continually expanding his empire, is he just basically wanted one of every kind of person. he ruled from the Atlantic to the Pacific. He had all the way to China on one side, which wasn't China yet, and then all the way into, like, you know, Russia and Italy and everything on the other side. It was enormous.
So it's kind of like Noah's harem.
So there's this big reveal of the Khan. And he's coming out and they're making everybody bow, but the doctor refuses. Because he's old, and he's like, "I can't, my back."
And then and then Kublai Khan's like, "Oh, my legs, my back." And then they just like, "We're old, let's be buddies."
They bond. Let's be friends. Yeah.
It turns into like a sitcom.
And then
the doc and Kublai Khan.
I would watch that because the doctor's old and cranky again. He needs to go hang out with Benedict Wong, who plays the Kublai Khan on Marco Polo, and they can just bitch about being old. It'll be great. He'll be like, "Here, I've brought some arthritis cream," or what do old people have today? here's like a walking thing with tennis balls on the end, and Kublai Khan will be like, "This is a magnificent tribute."
So what game do they end up playing?
Backgammon.
They're playing backgammon, and the doctor wins, like, half of everything.
Yeah, he wins, like lots of land. Like, the doctor owns Cathay now or something. And he's like, "Eh, whatever."
He's not interested in it at all.
While this is happening, Ian and Ping Cho have teamed up to go get the TARDIS back. They get the TARDIS, but then there's Tagana there, and there's almost a sword fight, but then there's not a sword fight, and I was both disappointed and also like, well, I wouldn't have seen it anyway.
I really did want to see Ian
sword fight.
Because he'd be
Tagana.
So bad at it.
Yeah.
He would. Be great.
If this was an episode of New Who, there would have been at least 5 sword fights with the amount of sword fight potential that this series had.
But they didn't actually sword fight. It was so close. I would have loved that.
Yeah, that would have been good. And again, if this was a New Who episode, they would have taken Ping Cho away from her arranged marriage as well. Well, they brought her to the Kublai's summer palace where she can get married, and then her husband-to-be just dies.
You're like, well, that wraps that up.
And Kublai is like, are you sad about it? And she's like, meh. I didn't know him yet, so not really. Do I still get all of his stuff? That's my big question.
Yeah, that was a pretty easy resolve for that conflict. Let's see. Monkey Dude died.
How'd he die?
The Nazis got him.
Tagana killed him? Or the people that came
Bad
to...
Bad dates.
I don't know.
Because they wanted the TARDIS.
Yeah. Let's see. Khan and the Doc play backgammon for the TARDIS, and the Doctor loses.
And he is not a gracious loser.
No, he's
he
not.
Is, well, the dice were rigged, and I didn't have my lucky shoes on, and you're cheating. I'm taking my TARDIS and going home. No, wait, I can't.
There are a couple times, like, this is the second time in the episode where the Doctor just starts laughing because he has completely helpless. And, like, when Marco Polo first is like, yeah, I'm just going to take the TARDIS, and he just starts laughing. And he's like, he's pissed because he's like, I'm on this like backwater planet with this magnificent time machine, and I'm clearly smarter than everyone here. They're all stupid.
I better regenerate into someone younger and stronger so I can actually defend my property next time.
He's like, and I'm stuck here now because a dude took my box. Which is really kind of shows the difference between classic Who and New Who.
Well, if this was New Who, the episode would be called Dude Took My Box.
And back to Ping Cho for a second. Her husband-to-be dies, and it's pretty heavily implied that he basically OD'd on Mongolian Viagra, right?
No, yeah. That's totally yeah. an actual thing that happens in the episode.
He died.
He drank some spirits of which, as you know, is good for husbands on their wedding night. Like, literally, that's what Khan said.
Oh, what a boner. That was a terrible joke. I'm so sorry.
And his gravestone read, Death by Boner.
Wait, is that in the Marco Polo Netflix show, People Dying by Boners?
No, they do other things with their boners.
Any sword fights?
Oh, shitload.
With boners.
And then people get attacked by snakes, and then they're building catapults, and then things are on fire. And the Chinese guy, who's like the imperial regent, keeps like, he's got his little cage full of praying mantises, and he's going slowly crazy, going, I will learn all the secrets of the praying mantises, and then I can defeat those guys with all those swords and horses. And then he does, and you're like, what? That's my summary of the show. This is pre-Great Wall being built. The Great Wall of China is built as a reaction to Kublai Khan, because he did manage to make his way into... I think, is it Shangtu that's now Shanghai or something like that? It's a number of, like, the names of places are different but similar to what they're going to end up being. I might not be accurate on that, but it's a lot of, like, oh, this is the place today.
I don't know. The Cave of 500 Eyes is now a tourist, like, it's a gift shop.
It's the Cave of 500 Bargains.
What was even the point of the cave? Besides that Barbara went there and then got captured.
They had an episode to fill. That was what it was for. This 7-parter could have been a 3-parter.
Yeah. At least, I think it has better pacing than the Daleks, though.
Yeah.
Well, the Daleks was like a 27-parter.
It was only 8. Long. It was 8.
Now we will go over here. And now we will go over here. Please, get out of my way. I want to go over here. That's my imitation of the Dalek episode.
I do think Marco Polo had better writing and pacing, though. Like,
It had character stuff that I cared about.
Yeah, it flows a little better, I feel like. I mean, it definitely does drag now and then, but like I feel like it's a lot... It's pretty solid for what it is.
For
yeah.
60s serial pacing, it's pretty dang good.
Yeah.
You know what else happens in the cave?
What?
There's the whole thing with the cave...
The Scooby-Doo thing. Like, Scooby-Doo is like a constant theme. The eyes and the mask.
There's masks all over it, and there's, like, crystals through the eyes, but you can take the crystals out and, like, watch people, which is what happens. And, of course, it's, like, Susan who sees it.
And goes, ah! And they're like, no.
Screams, because she screams at everything. And then she's like, there are eyes there! And they're like, no, they're not. Susan, you're dumb.
I think the Cave of 500 Eyes was the hideout for Tagana's bad guys. That's what the point of that was, I guess.
But what was accomplished by going there? Because then didn't, like, Ping Cho and Susan were like, yeah, Tagana's the bad guy. And Marco Polo's like, you expect me to believe that because you say so?
Yeah, and they're like, well, he said this thing. And they're like, yeah, but I'm still just hearing that from you. Like, I didn't hear him say that. So
I feel like Marco Polo is kind of like, I don't like Tagana either, and I would love to have some proof that he's bad, but he's like, it's an official diplomat, and it's my job to take care of him, so I have to have some really good evidence to actually do something about him. So please go stumble around in the dark and find me some. Then bring it back to me, and then, you know, somebody might get killed, but then at least I can... Because then when they get to Shang-Chi and they talk to Kublai Khan, Kublai Khan's like, yeah, he's been plotting against us. We hate him. And they're like, oh, okay, let's go get him.
So and that's how that's resolved.
I think we're pretty much here at the end of the serial. I don't remember, they get caught and then they do like a shitty, like, let's escape thing. And the
they
usual...
get caught and escape like 5 times an episode.
Yeah. And then Marco and Tagana have a sword fight and Tagana's like, no, I'm not going to give you that privilege, and kills himself. Which is, like, I believe our second suicide on Doctor Who.
In four serials,
we've had 2 suicides. Because we had the dude who killed himself in the Daleks by cutting the cord.
Are you going to have a little suicide counter as this podcast goes along?
Yeah.
Like a little icon in the bottom left corner?
Yeah. Ding! 2. That's a pretty badass way to go out, though. Tagana's great. I like Tagana. Like, he's an interesting villain. He goes out interestingly.
Yeah, his logic and reasoning for why he's doing evil things is fairly makes sense and is straightforward. Like, I feel Doctor Who has an awful lot of problems with these characters are evil because they're evil. But, you know, sometimes when they have villains that are atypical and do weird things and, like, there's reasons for them to be doing what they're doing, it's really interesting.
Like I said, I feel like he's the strongest villain we've had so far. I mean, even more so than the Daleks, because the Daleks are great and all, but they didn't really do much.
You haven't gotten to the episode where everyone's dressed as moths, so...
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. That's the web planet, I think. God, that serial's awful. That serial is awful. But yeah, I like Tagana. I think he was a good villain. I like this serial a lot, actually. I think it's probably one of the strongest ones we've had so far, like, structurally and story-wise.
Better than Edge of Destruction?
Well, no, not better than Edge... Well, I mean, Edge of Destruction's great, and it's probably my favorite we've watched so far, but it's I feel like Marco Polo is,
you did say structurally,
yeah, it's like stronger, like script wise like Edge of Destruction doesn't make sense.
Edge of Destruction didn't know what it was doing until it happened, which is part of what made it so fun. But no, you're right, like if you look at like how the story was built, but it was less fun to watch, so
that's true.
Right, this one is definitely, it has some slowness, it could be heavily edited and still retain most of its good bits.
And I do feel like, I mean, it probably would have moved a little quicker if you were also watching it. Because, like, there's a good handful of fight scenes where you're like, I'm just hearing stuff shuffling around. That's fun.
So where did all of this audio come from? That, like, we have the video is lost, but the audio is still around.
From what I gather, people just used to, like, set things up next to their TV and record it. So it was like, it would be like, you know, people like taping stuff off a TV with their VCRs, but back then they didn't have VCRs and they could just record audio sort of thing.
Okay, so it's not like an official BBC recording, it's like a fan recording from back then. And people taking photographs of their television.
Because people have always been giant nerds.
Exactly.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to be a giant nerd these days. It's like way easier. Back then, you had to, like, know that something was happening and then watch it. Otherwise, you missed it forever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm like, if you just caught this serial, like, that was your starting point. Or any of them, really, these, like, 8-parters.
Coming into, like, the third or fifth episode and being like, who are these people? What's happening?
And then being like, well, I guess this is what the show is. And then you watch, like, 7 episodes where that's what the show is, and then all of a sudden, now we're on Mars, you know what I mean?
I love Doctor Who's ability to change genre, like, all the time, and still be the same show. like most shows, especially American shows, they want to like have the sets and the characters, and this is what we use most of the time. And Doctor Who's like, no, we want to go somewhere different every time. And, you know, sometimes it's comedy, and sometimes it's really suspenseful, and sometimes it's action with lots of explosions. It's just, it has such variety.
You know, an American show did that? Not to the extent of Doctor Who, but fairly well. It's Angel.
Angel?
Where they just get to the one season where it's like, what if it was completely different? And everybody works for Wolfram and Hart, and the show is entirely different in tone and stuff from what it was.
I thought you were going to say
Sliders.
It was
like a semi-reboot where they were going to go for a couple years with that or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Sliders.
Sliders.
Sliders is normally pretty consistent, though, in like what kind of story you're going to get.
Yeah. But, I mean, it jumps around. I mean, I guess it goes to different places and stuff.
Yeah. You do have the thing where you're exploring new worlds, but it's always pretty much the same. You're just in a different place.
Doctor Who just has an amazing ability to be different while being the same. Like I said, you know, I'm a big fan of New Who, and it's basically 100% different, but it's still the same show.
We talked about that some in Daleks when we were talking about it's weird how you're watching it and you're thinking, okay, some of this stuff has been retconned. Some of this stuff conflicts with some of the stuff that we've watched. But also, the Daleks are from Skaarow. Like, all of this stuff that's been established is still in New Who. And it's weird how long it's been going.
And it's still, I mean, it's still keeping up with the continuity.
For the most part.
For the most part, yeah.
As much as any kind of continuity could be said to exist.
Like, if you tried to do a New Who episode with Kublai Khan and Marco Polo, as I've suggested, they do a crossover with the Marco Polo show, it would kind of have to conflict with this, but if you wanted to tell that story, you'd figure out a way to make it make enough sense that no one would mind too much, besides everyone who minded a lot. Like, I mean, that's the beauty with Doctor Who, is like, you can do something that completely contradicts stuff you've already done, but then you can also say, well, I had this crystal, so it's fine.
That's exactly it. That's the thing.
It's the crystals from the Cave of Skull. The Cave of 500 Eyes. Is there a cave in every episode?
He should go back to the Cave of 500 Eyes. The Doctor should have, like, some big, like, road trip reunion episode where he's going back and looking at stuff he's been to already. And again, it's the Cave of 500 Eyes now, where it's a tourist shop, and then, I don't know, there's some ghosts.
Alien ghosts.
The ghosts?
Great Tagana's ghost.
Yes.
Or Cyborg Tagana. He gets resurrected that way.
Yeah, I like that. And then you could have the ghost of Kublai Khan as well.
No, you just have Kublai Khan. He would just show up. The Mongolians have been trying to get a TARDIS for years. I want to see what happens with that subplot, because it's been in numerous episodes.
Like, even, like, in present day, they're still trying to get it.
Well, the Mongol horde doesn't necessarily exist anymore.
Or does it? Maybe it's a secret society.
In the Cave of 500 Eyes, there lives a secret society. There should be, like, cave paintings of the TARDIS, and there's just a big circle around it saying, get this. If you ever see one of these, get it. Ask the man for the keys and say you're confiscating it. He'll probably give them.
Doesn't he? I mean, he loses the TARDIS by betting for it. How does he get it back?
I don't remember.
Does he just give it back?
They steal the keys and then they run and get inside. And it's like, why didn't you do that a long time ago? And then they take off. And it's like Kublai Khan and Marco Polo are like, oh, these visitors, they truly were cool. And then it cuts to them in the TARDIS, like, pressing buttons, and it's, like, glowy, and there's, like, a nebula in the background. And Marco Polo's like, oh, I wish I'd gone with them. They could have taken me back to Italy so hard.
Well, to be fair, I mean, Khan lets Marco go back.
He doesn't at first.
Yeah.
Because he says,
you tricked me, or you lied.
The Khan did that in real life, though, because the Khan and Marco Polo were pretty tight. They were good friends. As much as a warrior king can be with some random guy he captured from a faraway land.
Which, I like that plan of, I really want to go home, so maybe if I give him a spaceship, he'll let me go? That's the best I got.
That's a good friendship.
Okay, if this was modern, Marco Polo would have stolen the TARDIS, and the Doctor would have had to ride a horse to Venice to try and get it back and meet up with Marco Polo there later. And then 5 years for the Doctor, and Marco Polo's like, hey, what's up?
And someone would have made a Marco Polo joke.
Yes, there would have been a Marco Polo.
There would have been...
Oh, totally.
There would have been 8 Marco Polo jokes before you ever even met Marco Polo.
When they were all dying of thirst, and they go take a drink from the TARDIS swimming pool, and then they just start swimming around, and then Marco comes in, and they go, Marco Polo, and he goes, what?
That was sadly missing.
What? Wait, was Marco Polo a game yet in 1964?
Oh, I don't.
Did the English have any swimming pools? Those are questions we must ask ourselves.
How old is Marco Polo?
I don't know.
Like, that's as a game.
Because, okay, Marco Polo, after being in the Orient for 26, 30 something years like that, he finally makes it home to find that Venice is at war with Genoa, or whatever it's pronounced, the people who make the ham salami. And the Genuans capture him, and he spends like 4 years in jail looking across the river at his home without being able to actually go there. That's the story of him.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's really a bummer, but he's pretty cool. But then he escapes and is home. And then I think he helps the doctor fight some vampire fish women.
Oh, I like this story.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
No, I'm reading the history of Marco Polo.
Okay, good.
I'm not even listening at all. Wait.
Yeah.
The legend has it that the famed explorer didn't really have a clue as to where he was going, much like the It person. No one seems to know what the origins of the name are, although there are a number of blah, 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 and none of the rest of this is important. The important thing is that Marco Polo is like the doctor.
I don't know where I'm going.
He's just bumping around space because he doesn't know how the TARDIS works yet.
I like to see a follow-up episode where Marco Polo has some sort of alien travel machine of his own and he's bopping all around. Call it Marco Polo Who.
The game itself was around since the 1500s, but not with that name. Called Blind Man's
Bluff.
Probably
after his father. It would have been like Iglesias Polo.
But yeah, because we're totally unoriginal, every time somebody would say, Marco! In the episode, Tony and I would both go, Polo! Because...
That's what you do.
That's what you do.
Yeah, you guys are doing it right. You turned it into a drinking game? How drunk were you while you watched?
Not drunk enough. Oh, we did drink a little. We didn't do a game. We should do a game.
We should get drunk and do a podcast.
Yeah.
Every time someone commits suicide, you take a drink.
Ah, that we'd be so dumb.
Now it's sad.
It is weird how, like, these early serials can get pretty dark. I mean, it was, like, intended to be educational thing for the family. Like, but it does get dark.
I'm more weirded out by the amount of, like, yeah, it's science. But, like, bookend by things that are actual science. And, like, how is a kid supposed to...
differentiate between what's real science and what's made up science.
Maybe I was just a dumb kid.
I think it works better now with made up science because it doesn't have to try as hard. But then also some of its greatest ideas have been based on when they tried to have actual science in it.
But yeah, so that was Marco Polo.
Marco.
Polo.
Marco.
So any final thoughts on the serial?
I don't really like things that are in black and white. Basically, the Marx Brothers is about the only black and white thing I genuinely enjoy.
So that's your final thought on the serial. Black and white. Boo. Yeah.
No, I liked it. I like Old Who in general. I don't have any grand plans to watch all of it in order like you do, but when it presents itself to me, I really do enjoy the show because it still is the show that I like, just from an era that I'm not as familiar with.
I always feel like watching Classic Who is like reading the Doctor's live journal from when he was in high school. Like, it's all of his, like, embarrassing, like, trying to be more important than he actually is, kind of racist posts. Like, that's what this era of Doctor Who feels like.
And it's kind of interesting because, like, you say that, and he's also, like, incredibly old.
Yeah, and yet somehow he still feels like the
very
youngest
young
doctor. Yeah.
Didn't he say something like that in Time Crash when David Tennant met Peter Davison? And he was like, back when I was old and grumpy, you know, like you do when you're young.
It's
Which
interesting.
Rings very true to me, Ching, the first doctor.
Yeah, it's really weird to see this doctor that's not your doctor. Like, they do that a lot with, like, the characters on the show, where then they meet a different regeneration and say, oh, you're not my doctor. You're this weird person who has similar memories.
I don't know the context of it all, at all, because I saw it on Tumblr randomly.
Tumblr has no context.
It was some comic page, and it's Ian in the TARDIS with 11. The doctor's like, yeah, I just hit these buttons and I tell the TARDIS where to go. And Ian's like, see, you're not the doctor.
If you were the real doctor, you wouldn't know where you were going.
You wouldn't know any of this. And it's making the doctor angry. It's cute.
Because, yeah, now the doctor can borderline go wherever he wants. Usually he goes where the TARDIS thinks he should go. He just goes in and presses the random button and sees what happens. But he could actually fly somewhere if that's where he wanted to go.
But, yeah, at this point, he has no idea what he's doing.
Well, I guess he really only did just very recently steal it, and as such, doesn't really know how it works yet.
I like your theory, though, that in, like, the very first episode, he's talking to Ian and Barbara about how they can't go home, and, like, how they're stranded, and one day they'll get back home. And Joe said, I bet they just went on, like, a vacation, and the doctor can't figure out how to get back. And that's that's it. That's how it started.
Yeah, like, but let's just lost. Let's fly somewhere. And then they're like, well, can we go back now? Well, let's just keep going. Let's go somewhere else now.
Because he borderline kidnaps them, right?
No, yeah, it's not borderline. It's full-on kidnapping.
And it's pretty much because he's like, don't think my ship is cool. Let me show you how cool it is. Boop. Oh, right, I can't take you back home now.
Why are you so mad all the time?
You'd think he would have just left them in with Marco Polo and then left himself.
Yeah.
He's tried, like, to leave them a couple of times.
Yeah. He kidnaps them, and then he's grumpy that he did it.
He's grumpy that they're there all the time.
Why did you let me kidnap you? You fools.
He's very not heroic at this point.
You know,
he almost kills someone.
He's not the doctor yet.
Yeah, he almost kills someone in the first serial just because he's like, oh, I just want to get out of here.
You know which character, though, has closest to the morals that the doctor has now?
Ian.
It's Ian. It's kind of adorable watching who you're like, a lot of who he is now comes from Ian. And it's like he's a proud dad.
Like Ian and Barbara. Mixed.
Ian and Barbara, yeah.
Ian sort of like, I'm going to save the day-ness with Barbara's...
Actually, I know what's actually going on.
Yeah, I
Shut
actually
up and
know
listen
what
to, me.
To do. They're, in a way, they were like the first parental figures.
He had to raise himself up to that point, so he got a bunch of younger people to be his parents.
That makes sense with the way this show works.
Yeah, because he was just weaved in a loom, right?
So like you're saying, like David Tennant and Matt Smith's doctors are actively thinking of the heroic first companion that they have and trying to emulate him in terms of how he would confront the world instead of just cranking at people.
I don't think that so much as their influence is there.
Yeah.
Like him growing as a person involves Ian and Barbara a lot, I think.
I mean, all of his companions probably. I mean, yeah, they're
That's
strong
how he
influences.
Becomes
That's how
more
he becomes
human.
Who he is. Yeah. And that's how he grows up in a way.
Yeah, and is less grumpy.
Well, at the moment he's really grumpy.
And like sick a lot and just old. He's just old.
That's one of my favorite parts is they're walking through the desert for 5 episodes and the doctor's just like, oh my god, there is so much, you would not believe how much walking is involved. Can I sit down? And just that juxtaposed to New Who is fantastic.
Yeah, because Peter Capaldi, who is currently playing the doctor, is older than William Hartnell was when he played the Doctor. And Peter Capaldi runs around and explodes things all the time. He's still as much of an action hero as recent Doctors have been. So it just shows you how crotchety and old just William Hartnell was and how that influenced what was happening. I don't know if this is too much spoilers, but I feel like when they were casting Patrick Troughton as the second Doctor, instead of trying to find somebody who looked and acted like William Hartnell, they thought, we should get somebody who can run around more. That would probably free us up to write things better.
But William Hartnell being old and crotchety also allowed the writers to be like, well, we have to write an episode without the Doctor because he's going on vacation. He's old and falls down.
William Hartnell was obsessed with making sure that the buttons he pressed on the TARDIS console were the same each time. Like, he went and tried to figure out what every single button did so that, like, the children were watching at home and not going, hey, when he pressed that button last time, it turned on the food processor, but this time it was the brakes. Like, no. It's like a submarine and I need to know what all these buttons do. And so like the production designers had to go and like make him a chart.
That's kind of adorable.
That actually explains the like labeled with tape and Sharpie on some of the buttons.
If only he gave that much thought to his lines.
Yeah, no, he flubs them like crazy. They had a big cue card guy, but he couldn't read them without his glasses on.
That's
which
the
is
the most it, first Doctor thing I've ever heard.
I do feel like a good portion of his sort of like bumbliness is on purpose, because there's like a later episode where he plays a villain who for some reason looks exactly like the Doctor and it's never explained. Oh. But like he doesn't flub his lines. He's like really on point. He doesn't bumble around. He's calculating and blah blah blah. And I feel like part of the bumbliness is put on purpose. Some of it is because he's, you know, old and forgetful, but
I feel like from what I remember from the documentary, it was him acting during the first season but him not acting during his last season. Because he decrepified so much in between the first episode with him and his last episode. But I think he really loved being the Doctor. I mean, more so than anybody else who is taking over his mantles. He sort of set that tone of, I have to be good for the children. I need to, you know, and whenever he's in person, being in character. So that when kids meet William Hartnell, they met the Doctor, you know.
I mean, and he's my Doctor. Like, he's the first Doctor I ever really watch. I was watching it when you made me watch New Who.
I made you watch it because you were being wrong.
But so yeah, but I love Hartnell. I think he's great. And I hope more people will give him a chance.
Watch him.
I saw him randomly in some other movie and I'm like, is that Doctor Who? It was a Peter Sellers movie, and he's like a army guy.
I think it's called like The Mouse That Roared or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think there's another doctor in that as well. I don't remember. Or somebody Doctor Who-y.
Well, basically every British actor is Doctor Who.
That's
they
true.
Only have so many, so... and they just recycle them with their props and their sets.
I mean, even the Doctor himself.
Well, oftentimes the Doctor will play a bad guy on the show before he actually plays the Doctor. Like half of them have been on the show as somebody else.
Capaldi played two characters and is now playing the Doctor, because I mean he was in the Fires of Pompeii and he was on Torchwood.
Who's he in Torchwood?
It's Frobisher. That was his name, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't Frobisher. He was a different Frobisher. Britain only has so many last names as well.
He was fantastic in Children of Earth.
He's a really good actor.
Children of Earth is actually just a really good, really good series. Like, I really like that.
Is a metaphor about drugs.
Should we wrap this up?
Sure. I think we talked about things.
Yeah, things
and amount of time.
Things were discussed.
So you guys are going to PayPal me some ice cream, right?
Yep.
Sure.
I'll print it out through my fax machine.
Tuna flavored, right?
Tuna flavored mint chip? Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me on my podcast. I meant to be at least 20% wittier than I was, but kind of hungover. So I think I did a pretty good job.
See, I still think we should do one where we get drunk and then do it. I
we
think
should.
That's an excellent idea.
I think we should get everybody who's done an episode.
And get all of them wasted.
That'll be for the Christmas special with What's-His-Face's episodes. Grand Moff Tarkin's episodes.
Yeah, the Peter Cushing. Yeah.
That sounds like a plan to me.
I'm down for that.
Okay. But I don't want tuna-flavored alcohol.
That's all we have.
That's where I draw the line.
Yeah.
You gotta stop letting your cat do all your shopping.
But we're too lazy.
And she's a really good house cat.
Yeah.
Is she the one that keeps sending me Joe's blood?
Well, she puts the labels on.
That was a joke from the beginning of this podcast.
Does anyone remember that?
Nice way to bookend it. But yeah, thanks for being on the podcast, man.
You're welcome. I watch these episodes for you, and then I talk about them for you. I hope it was really helpful to all your people listening to this who are deciding whether or not they should watch Doctor Who.
Massive amounts of fans.
Yeah, our...
There's 10 of them.
Well, you posted on Tumblr, and I don't Tumble, so I won't listen to your podcast. I'll just be on it.
You can also subscribe to it on iTunes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's pretty rad.
Or Feedburner.
Or Feedburner, yeah.
No. Well, let me launch iTunes, and then I'll know about it.
Next episode.
Yes, next time we will be doing the Keys of Marinus.
I won't be there.
Which is 6 episodes.
Oh my god.
But they exist.
Does Marinus have like one of those little beepers on his keys so they can find him? Because I bet over like 3 episodes out of that, they'll just lose the keys and then they'll have to look around for them.
It's just a constant theme of let's find keys.
When do we get to a point where it is pretty regularly for... I already asked this question. I know I have.
It's a few doctors in.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you think 6 and 7 are bad. Wait till we get to... That 12-parter.
If it's a 12-parter, you're allowed to skip every other episode.
I think we're going to split it in half and do 6.
Do a 2-parter.
Yeah, 6 and 6. Thanks for listening to the Watchathon of Rassilon. I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
I'm Ray Heath. Cousin that you didn't know about.
And subscribe on iTunes and all that stuff.
I won't be subscribing. I only listen to episodes that I'm on.
Now, Ray... sing us out.
Bum ba 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 bum ba 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 bum ba 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 bum ba 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 bum. Woo! Bum ba 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 bum. Woo! 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 Okay, my mouth hurts now.